Butterfly by Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio here coming to you live from Skid Row Studios. Now, this week we will be talking about poetry, drama, and spoken word with Lee Beck, Artistic Director of the Public Works Improvisational Theater, Adrian Ziegler, so glad to have you here with us, and also some of our regulum here with Drama Stage. We got Andrea Ross, Michelle Autry. Also, a couple of guests coming in here with us. Leanna Chasse, Nate, Darren Medrick, Too Tall, known as Too Tall. So welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'd like to start off with Lee. He is the Artistic Director of Public Works Improvisational Theater. Can you tell our listening audience about your background and how did you get off into writing and performing?
Well, I was born in Monrovia, California, and left here when I was 5 years old and was taken to Northern California, where I grew up in Sacramento area. My father and mother were converted to fundamentalist religion when I was about 8 years old, and my dad became a Jack League preacher. And so I grew up in the One Cup Church of Christ. And at the age of 12, I started giving talks. And at the age of 17, I became a traveling evangelist and began traveling with an evangelist from Mississippi all across the South during those heady days of the early 60s. And all the way up into New England and then across the United States, across the plains a lot in Oklahoma and Texas and Arkansas and Kansas and Nebraska and Iowa and of course, California a lot and even parts of Mexico and sometimes preaching 50 nights in a row from coast to coast and cover to cover. Wow. So I got into acting by performing every night as a preacher, speaking from notes. And, of course, I had emceed my first event in grammar school at my at Marvin Marshall Grammar School in Sacramento in Carmichael, California, where I grew up. So I had the bug early on, and in high school I belonged to a quartet, and we did do performance. But being a performer wasn't exactly what my father had in mind for me. He was more interested in me becoming a preacher, and I knew that. And so I kind of just went in that direction. And then I got a scholarship to a Baptist college when I was right out of high school, but was advised by my dad and my elders that it would be dangerous to get a liberal education. So I skipped college and started traveling with an evangelist. And so that's what I did. And then, of course, the time came when I left all of that behind, and I immediately did about 5 years of kind of a satire on my previous life. I did a radio show called The Brother Lee Love Survival Revival Hour on KZAP FM radio with the Greater Carmichael Traveling Street Band and Sanctified Singers. Mm-hmm. And it was a live show, and we often did site-specific events, like Easter sunrise services on the old Fair Oaks Bridge that crossed the American River. And then we did dance around the nukes at Rancho Seco for 7 days, and I blew my trumpet at it on the seventh day, and the walls came tumbling down. And it was the first nuclear reactor to ever get shut down. So we mixed a lot of, our services on the old Fair Oaks Bridge was to dramatize the river. Mm-hmm. Saving the river, and this was back in the very early 70s. We got into ecology and saw that as a budding movement, and we kind of capitalized on that, and I would get on the radio and preach, against the war back then and against and about environmental issues and, mm-hmm. all the different kinds of issues that were going on, and it was a comedy show, though, really. We didn't Mm-hmm. Tried to preach, really preach to anybody.
let me ask you this.
Then. Tried not to.
Mm-hmm. What was it? Can you think about the turning point in which you decide to, because we got a similar background.
I was
in the ministry myself for a couple of years, ordained as a Baptist minister for about 3 years. And I know how hard it is to move away from a belief system, especially one that's all the way on the other side of the spectrum as far as so-called sin is concerned, or the world is concerned.
Yeah.
What was the process of like moving from one extreme to the next?
Well, of course, there were a lot of factors. You know, just I always say the times did a lot. I mean, a lot of preachers changed their religion during the 60s. You know, we were moved by the times to new positions and new ideas and opened up in new ways by the civil rights movement and by the anti-war movement and by, the war itself and the terribleness of that and the assassinations of some of our leaders. And, I was right there in Jackson when Medgar Evers was killed. And I was right there when the Freedom Riders came down into the South. I was actually preaching at a One Cup Church of Christ there in the panhandle of Florida. And, I was influenced by that. I felt like I should be involved, but we practiced not being involved and not voting and that sort of thing. But I did start what they called then a colored church with a black man who came to my Sunday morning services on Easter one time. And in that experience, the church was burnt down on the 10th night of our revival meeting. And there was a lot of talk of running that preacher from California out of town on a rail. So that then that helped me move a little bit, I think, I began to develop. As I traveled, of course, I read a lot because I was going from town to town, and I began to read secular books, and to notice what was going on in the South and about segregation. And you just couldn't help but see that this was not right. Yeah. And then, the fact that a lot of church folks were behind it too, it influenced me greatly. And I married very young because, we get married young in the Church of Christ because sex outside of marriage is a sin.
Yeah.
And not only that, I had a childhood sweetheart and we married young and we had boys and, we went down into the South and started preaching and immediately got caught up in that milieu and had the church burnt down and so on. Yeah. So that moved me a lot. And during that time, too, our youngest son was severely retarded and epileptic. And this changed my way of looking at a lot of things because here was something I couldn't pray away and I couldn't change. And it, I think it, gave me a real dose of reality that I... just couldn't get around.
Well, let me ask you this. Tell us about the Public Works Improvisational Theater.
Well, Public Works was started in 1974 by Marlene Rasnick and Dale Unson Morris. Dale was married to Jim Kahn, who was the minister of the church in Ocean Park. And there was a time, again, of political turmoil in Santa Monica. There was a big move to save Santa Monica from development of high rises and stuff along the ocean and stuff. And I came to LA in 76 and met Marlene, took a class from her. And then I came back. I went away, went to Taos, New Mexico for a while. And then I came back and looked her up again and ended up marrying her. And we were together for about 30 years, and she was a dedicated artist and a terrific improvisational actress. And it was funny because in Sacramento, I had done a one-man show on my own in a restaurant, and a fella came up and told me I should look up Synergy Trust when I came to L.A. Well, that was Marlene's company before Public Works, and it was right there in Silver Lake where the old feed store used to be on Hyperion. And I didn't get to see that era because I came a little bit later, but it was ironic that I actually hooked up and even married the woman who was the head of the company. And Sadly, Marlene passed away about 11 years ago from ovarian cancer, and not without becoming a great international spokesperson for medical marijuana. And as we did theater together, and eventually it was just she and me and a jazz musician doing stuff, and we were improvisational. We used improv to develop our material, and a lot of our shows contained a lot of improv in the moment. But we also set a lot of pieces, and it was just so much fun. And we were radicalized. We became more and more radicalized politically as we went along and began to try to do things that were relevant to our times and our way of feeling about things.
How about Confessions of a Pulpiteer?
Well, that, of course, is
that's a one-man show.
That's a one-man show that I wrote 3 or 4 years ago and have taken on tour and have done here in L.A. a couple of times. It's about my days as a fundamentalist evangelist and kind of tells the story of my it's kind of an Americana piece, and it takes you through my parents being converted and then the early influences on me, and then of course my travels and my mentor and my learning how to be a preacher, and it has a lot of hymns in it. I stop and sing songs sometimes with the audience. I have passed out hymn books to the audience and had them sing along with me some of the hymns, and then I wrote several songs for the piece. Mm-hmm. And I always do it. We always work with a musician, and so.
I heard some of it. I like it a lot.
Thank you.
What is your process for creating?
Well, I would say
writing and performing.
My biggest influence, of course, and the way I work is purely from improvisation and inspiration, kind of thing. I can't just sit down and think, I want to write a play about this. You know, I start telling, you know, I get in a room with my fellow that I work with, that works with me and listens to me. And when we were writing that play, we used a tape recorder and recorded and then edited and actually began to write it up, because I had never really written a full-length piece like that before. Marlene and I had improvised our pieces, and some of them we wrote, some of them we didn't even have written down. We just did them, you know, because we knew them. I mean, we did them every day for months and months and months, and then performed them too, you know. And I think once you perform quite a few times something, it sits in your mind pretty good. So you just have to kind of bring it back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely improvisational techniques and Spolin theater games and interplay with your fellow actor and so on.
Any special writers that influence you?
Well, of course, the writers of the Bible influenced me, I'd say, probably more than anything. All the books in the Bible, I read that. I knew it pretty well when I was a kid. I could quote a lot of it. And that gave me a good background in, I don't know, kind of respect for the word, you know. And and it was fun to know a lot about it and so on. But then, you know, as I came out of that, I began to read a lot of different writers. You know, I liked the plays of O'Neill and the poetry of Ferlinghetti, the historical novels of Gore Vidal, the poetry of Ginsberg, and the writings of Kesey and Vonnegut. And Lenny Bruce was a big inspiration to me, because I first started doing stand-up comedy after I quit being a preacher and started, you know, I started, because I always had a knack for making people laugh. So I started doing stand-up comedy. And Lenny Bruce really kind of cut me free a little bit, you know, with his How to Talk Dirty and Influence People. And several others, you know, people like George Carlin and different performers who have used improvisation to develop their work as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this then. What advice would you give to young artists who are developing one-man or one-person shows? You know.
Well, I think to play games, to play theater games, to get out of your head. Don't. I think people need to, you know, kind of stand back from their own stuff a little bit, you know, and not be didactic, especially when you're doing political pieces. It's important not to be preachy and stuff like that with it, because it can turn off an audience and bore them to death real quick. Mm-hmm. So, you know, playing, I think, it's all playing to me. It's playing. That's what a play is, and it's something with a good spirit to it, you know. So, I don't know. I just, I would advise people to, you know, stick with what you want to do. If that's what you want to do, just stick with it. That's what I did. I stuck with it all the way, and, you know, I just never really wanted to do much else, but... play. I mean, I took lots of straight jobs, but I always came back to being a performer. And, mm-hmm. and even when I worked, you know, I used to work all day long painting houses and then come home and go off and rehearse for mm-hmm. 3 or 4 hours every night.
Now, when you're performing your piece, especially in terms of improvisation, when you're working with different audience, do that make you bring in different things in relationship to the audience that you may be performing a piece in front of?
Well, yeah, I think sometimes you can't help yeah. that. I mean, I think, you know, especially having been a preacher, you know, you watch your audience. If you see you're getting to somebody, then you start driving that sermon home to that person, you know, to kind of help them out, help them move, you know. And, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And the same... I know it's kind of true when you're performing. You look at people and you see the audience. But
let me read a little something about the Provincetown Players. Provincetown Players, which is the origin of community theater here, definitely in the United States. Provincetown Players began when a group of writers and artists who was vacationing in Provincetown, Massachusetts, presented their plays July the 15th, 1915, on the veranda of Hudson Halfgood and Neat's Boards, rented Ocean View Cottage. The two plays was Constance by Neat's Boards and Suppressed Desires by husband and wife team George Cram Cook Jiggs and Susan Glassbell, who founded the Provincetown Playhouse. Provincetown Players with John Reed. And they had two makeshift sets, one facing the ocean, one facing the living room, where quickly organized by Robert Edmund Jones, already the most prominent American practicing the new stagecraft, who was also vacationing in Provincetown. Many friends and neighbors not in attendance that night heard about the plays and wanted to see them. So they were presented in a makeshift theater on the wharf owned by Mary Heaton Voss. Their popularity was such that, led by George Jiggs Cram Cooks, two more plays was presented that summer, which included amateur acting by visual artist Charles DeMoot, B.J. O. Northfeld, and Cook. Back in Greenwich Village, New York, where most of the group lived, Cook stirred up enthusiasm that fall and winter such that even greater number of writers and artists made their way to Provincetown the next summer. These new participants included journalist and poet John Reed, writer Louise Bryant, painter Marston Hartley, artist William and Margareta Zoss, and the famed hobo poet Harry Kemp, editor of The Masses, Max Eastman, Flora Dell, and Eugene O'Neill. Now, this was the beginning of Community Theater Company here in the United States, and also the beginning of your first integrated companies that headed to Broadway, where African-Americans performed on Broadway, starting with Charles Giplin and then Paul Robeson and et cetera, Paul Robeson opening the door. So the Provincetown Players, this is what the improvisational theater reminds me of, because they came together because they didn't like what they call the junk that was going on Broadway, all musical and very expensive shows and stuff like that. I bring that up to ask you, what do you think the state of theater here in Los Angeles?
Well, I think Los Angeles has a really vibrant theater community. Mm-hmm. There's hundreds of theater spaces, and of course our big theaters, a lot of them are doing really good work. I especially like some of the stuff that Kirk Douglas does down there that they produce and show. And I especially like small theaters. I like to go and see what people are creating, and I think it's really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
To see local folks acting, performing, and being supported by local folks. I mm-hmm. like that.
Okay.
And, I've always had that in Silver Lake Echo Park. I've had a nice following that have attended my projects. And, yesterday, I attended the play you'll hear about later.
Yes.
And that was wonderful, just to see the support of the community. And that,
okay.
It meant something to everybody.
We'll talk about that. Let's bring in our other in-studio guest, Adrian Ziegler.
Peace and blessings, Melvin.
Yes, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you.
Yeah. Tell our listening audience about your background and how did you get off into writing and performing?
Well, originally, I'm from Maryland. I was born and raised in Prince George's County, Maryland. I've been in Los Angeles for about 7 years now. And in a nutshell, I can tell you that performing arts is in my blood. My dad, he's a very well-known musician in Maryland, Dr. Ronald Ziegler. He plays the saxophone, the flute, the clarinet. So as a child, my father had me in all types of music lessons. My mom's a vocalist. She studied classical piano and music. So my mom had me in vocal lessons. So both my parents had me in the arts as a child. And my favorite genre was always drama. It was always theater, acting, and I love writing. And at the early age of 4, I started writing in a journal. And then from my journal entries, it grew into spoken word and poetry and into scripts and writing. So since the age of 4, I've always been in love with the pen.
That's amazing. Because I was getting ready to ask you about your process. Have you developed a process that's unique to you for creating?
Truthfully, I'd probably say the best thing that works for me as an artist, I would say, is writing the truth and writing what I know. So I love writing, and I just write from my own experiences because that's what I know 100% without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Who are some of the writers that influence you?
Great question, Melvin. It's a lot of people. I love Tupac's poetry, The Rose That Grew From Concrete. That's my favorite book of poetry. As a child, my dad introduced me, and I enjoyed reading Langston Hughes. Lorraine Hansberry, I love her plays and her writing. So, yeah, Lorraine, Tupac, Confucius.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great philosopher. I read Confucius almost every day. So those are writers that influenced me while mm-hmm. growing up throughout my years.
Mm-hmm. Now, later on, we're going to hear some of your live performances from some of your work. When you're out there performing, especially your one-person play, and I was talking to Lee just a minute ago, which is improvisational theater, mm-hmm. and when you're working from a script, you know, a textual theater, as they call, do you find yourself, do you have to improvise in between, or you stick straight to the script?
I do both. For the most part, in my theater script writing, when I'm performing it, I primarily stick to the script. But there are times when I'm performing, I may have like a oomph, like a feeling of something, like in my action, or maybe with a couple of words, so I'll add that to it if I'm mm-hmm. feeling it. You know, mm-hmm. my character feels that.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about if you find yourself, you know, the great thing about improvisation, if an actor is out there working with another actor, and lose a line or something like that, that other actor can rescue him. How about what's happening if you're out there by yourself? What do you depend on if you run into problems like that?
You know, okay, when that has happened to me when performing, I just, because I still stay in character, even if I forget the line, and I just go on to the next moment of what I do remember or what my character would do. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you know, I mean, of course, in theater, you know the rules, as long as the audience can't tell. So I stay in character and I don't break, you know, I do what my character would do.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I want to ask later on when we kind of have a round table, but I can ask you now, what is the difference between poetry and spoken word? Or is there a difference?
Yes, there is a difference. I would say that poetry deals more with verses and stanzas, and it's less words. And spoken word is more of a performance. I even say some spoken word may have some drama in it. It's more acting. Spoken word is way more words. Some people may sing, like I said, dramatize. Yeah, so spoken word's more words, and poetry's more verses and stanzas. So there is a difference.
Okay. Let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back so we can get into some live performances and more discussion.
All right, I'm down, Melvin.
Okay.
This is the community calendar for the month of March. The Veterans Community Theater Workshop is held every Tuesday from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. It is free to veterans and non-veterans. The workshop participants are currently working on writing individual stage plays. The location is The Vortex at 2341 West Olympic Boulevard. That is near the corners of Santa Fe and Olympic, and the Metro bus number 60 and number 66 stop near or close to the corner. If you are interested or for more information, the number is 213-908-6587.
Sunday, March 17th, 24th, 31st at 4 p.m., Theater Perception Consortium presents Sick and Tired, a stage play about the freedom journey of Fannie Lou Hamer. Tickets are on sale now for $20. Advanced senior groups, $25 at the door. Limited seating. For more information, please contact Tanisha Webb at 323-251-9022. Location is the Performance Corner at 214 Hardy Street, Inglewood, California. We have been extended for Sunday matinees.
The Root and Wings Project presents the world premiere of Tree of Fire. The playwright is Jesse Bliss, and the producer is Peter Woods. Tree of Fire is about a magnolia tree catching fire in an aged women's prison. Tree of Fire opened March 8th of 2013. The performances are Friday and Saturday nights at 8 p.m. and will continue through the month of March. Sunday, March 31st, performance will be at 2 p.m. The location is the Inner City Arts, the Rosendahl Theater at 720 Kohler Street, Los Angeles, California, 90021. And for tickets, the information is 310-994-3167.
Upcoming guests on the Kumar Report Monday, March 18th, 2013 are Ann Porter talking about the corporation and Pastor Tony Stallworth from the Central City Church of the Nazarene.
If you have community events that you would like announced on our air, please send the info to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. And the call-in number for the show tonight is area code 800-893-9562. And now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Andrea Ross and Liliana Chaché. Mm-hmm. Now, on Friday, March the 8th, 2013, in celebration of International Women's Day, ICUJP had Earlene Anthony do the reflection. The tape is about 2 minutes and 50 seconds.
Anthony, who is not a stranger amongst us, good to see you guys again this morning, but thank you for coming, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Mm-hmm. Ready?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
My name is Earlene Anthony, and I am with Drama Stage Qumran. I would like to thank ICUJP for allowing me to do the reflection on this International Women's Day. It's ironic that I'm doing this reflection on International Women's Day because three of the organizations that I'm proud to be involved in, whereas I've watched women rise to leadership positions. The Roby Theater Company, where Karen Chappelle recently replaced Ben Guillory as the chairperson on the board of directors. The Peace Center, where Dr. Susan Stauffer is the director. And of course, right here at ICUJP, where our Grace has become the chairperson on the board of directors. So today, who I would like to do my reflection on is the First Lady, Michelle Obama. The reason I would like to reflect on the First Lady, Michelle Obama, is I want to stress how important it is for women to step up to leadership positions and provide something new in this violent, war-torn, man-led world. We as women must stress the importance of the family on this International Women's Day. And that's why I picked Michelle Obama, who is the head of the first family. The family is all important. The family shall be held together by love. And in closing, we as women on this International Women's Day must tell our fathers, our husbands, our sons, and our brothers to hate love, to hate war, excuse me. I'm all excited here. To hate war and love peace. Thank you.
Okay, I just want to run around the table one quick, take a few minutes. I want to ask a question from the female writers here and artists. What can female writers do to contribute to more women in leadership positions, not just in writings, but here in the country as a whole? I want to pick up on that.
All right, I'll speak on it. Nate, I'm a comic from Houston, Texas, but recently relocated here to Los Angeles. I don't think women have to do anything different to be a leader. I think, you know, as Adrian Ziegler was saying earlier, just speaking your truth. Mm-hmm. Whenever you just create from, an honest place and you speak your truth and share your gift, then, I mean, that's leadership in and of itself. And so when you continue to do that, I think people can tell that you're more authentic and they can connect to you. Okay. And that's how you become a leader, when people genuinely just follow your work.
Okay.
Yeah, her key word, I'm going to piggyback on what she said earlier, authenticism is that's what we need to do, and stay true to oneself and just get in there. And like she said, share your gift and express yourself, because creativity is the way. And, you know, just show up and show out.
Andrea.
Well, for me, I would say it starts fundamentally at home, because that's where you learn to cultivate and get your enrichment. The mother is the first authentic teacher of the child. And if you instill those, you know, hopes and dreams in that child at an early age, then they're more apt to follow through. And just like he started it for writing, he said that tonight. Okay. His mother and his father mm-hmm. were great creative personalities. Mm-hmm. Now look, it's transcended to another generation. So,
okay.
Yes.
Michelle.
I would say what's most important is that women believe that they can lead in being a virtuous woman, especially in establishing that role, I think, that God really had in mind when he procreated or created woman, in that we engender and encourage men through the example that we set in being true to ourselves and expressing our experiences. I've experienced horrible sexism because I'm tiny, because I'm fair, and, oh, she's a witch. You're not supposed to do that. Go back, mm-hmm. you know, get pregnant, girl. Go walk, you know, go cook me some mm-hmm. chitlins or something. Oh. You're not supposed to do that. You know, you're bad. You're not supposed, men do this. So I think that when we engender and encourage and create that balance with the male masculine, then we can go forth, take advantage of every opportunity, use your gifts, use your talents, write, sing, contribute.
Okay. All right. Okay, let's move into the performance part. We got about 17 or 18 minutes. We're going to do some little short performance pieces, starting off with Leilani. She's going to do a little short piece from the Fannie Lou Hamer piece, Sick and Tired. Yes. Leilani Sashay.
Okay, yeah. You know, most of you know me from the Bold and Beautiful, CBS, 12:30 to 1. I'm going to do two characters. I'm doing two characters in the play. And the first one is...
Now, how long is it?
I'm going to break them up.
Okay, because we got a couple minutes.
I'm not going to go fast.
Okay.
Okay, the first one is a 98-year-old elderly woman. Well, I'll be. I've just been told and I ain't allowed to vote in this here 2012 presidential election because I ain't got no valid voter's ID. Now, I'm nearly 98 years old and it appears that I'm living on a 21st century plantation. Y'all's pointed hats are beginning to show. The Lord done blessed me to live to see a black man become president of these United States of America. And I still got to go through that voter ID bull crap. Ernestine. What's that mean in so many words? What words did he use exactly? Or did he write it down for you, huh? Did he write it down on a little piece of paper that looked like a check? And did it have some numbers on it that looked like a 2 and a 0 and another 0 and a dot and a 0 and a 0, huh, fool? I seen that check in the drawer signed by Mr. Roman and made out to you. He done paid you off, ain't he? He done paid you to make trouble for your own kind.
Thanks.
Hi, work.
That was beautiful.
Duality. Okay. All right.
Okay, great. Andrea, yeah. Give me your first poem. We're going to come back and do the other one later to close. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll pay homage to all my people out on Skid Row, and this is called The Nickel. Because down on the nickel, man is fickle because you don't know what you're bound to see. But this trip will be a glimpse into L.A. life's most painful, shameful realities. Because down on the nickel, man is fickle. There's a frantic pace with every race, rainbow people, multicolored many kinds. There's insanity and lost humanity. And it makes you wonder, has this world finally stepped outside its natural damn mind? Down on the nickel, man is fickle. Does anybody care? Does anybody dare check out what's really going down? Can anybody see? And does anybody believe what's happening on the other side of your town, down on the nickel? Man is fickle. Won't you lend a hand? Get mad and take a stand. Be the voice of those muted by dismay, because it's not too late to change their fate, but we gotta do it now, right now, and don't wait one more day, because down on the nickel, man is fickle. There is tribulation, starvation, deprivation, mischief, mayhem, day and night, hopelessness, a frenzied, chaotic mess. Can anybody make this wrong go back right? Down on the nickel, man is fickle, because there's 80,000 lives with no place to call home unless a cardboard box or a shopping cart is considered that. 80,000 lives. scratching, trying to survive this everyday true living fact down on the nickel. Man is fickle. There ain't no trickle down economy. There is, oh my goodness, I can't even remember. It is so bad. There are giving up and they are giving out and they are giving hell. There is no doubt. Overlooked, overloaded, mindless souls that simply imploded. And down here, bullshit has hit the fan, blam, then exploded. Yes, 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 that is the nickel. And in the greatest nation in the living free world, that is just sad, unacceptable, mind-boggling, and in just one single word, it's just plain fickle.
Okay. Let's move to Adrian and then Lee and then Michelle going to do a piece for Adrian Ziegler.
Thank you, Melvin. Yeah. I'm actually going to recite an excerpt from my one-man stage play entitled Lennox. It's going to be held on April 20th at Chaos Network. Here's the excerpt.
I am a nice guy. I'm also liked. I'm very liked by many people, especially the women. I had women from all over the world. African, Asian, Indian, Mediterranean, Caribbean, spicy cayenne women with juicy holes. I was even loved by many women. But I refuse love now. I want no dealings with love. I have more lustful memories than anything. I recall my lustful days. I recall my flings with the rainbow of women. I was quite the stud in my prime. I was quite the athlete too. Cricket, soccer, polo, handball, tennis, golf. I was best athlete and most talented. From grammar school all the way to the University of West Indies. I was the one that everyone knew was destined for excellence. Now look at me. I've created my own world within these walls and haven't spent even 2 minutes with a human being in over 25 years. I haven't even gone outside to walk on the street and see people laughing. I haven't been to the opera or theater in ages. And I haven't had a massage by a Korean woman in ages either. Oh, I miss the oral from those women at the parlor. Nothing like good head from a beautiful Korean woman, eh? $20 an hour for a full body massage. I forgot how much for head. That's that excerpt.
Now, Mr. Lee back.
Wally Hilly was the musical director of the Unitarian Church on 8th Street here in Los Angeles for 50 years. And he was the artistic director. And this was during the time when at that church, the balcony was full because it became a hideout and a refuge and a gathering place for the blacklisted artists of Los Angeles during the 50s. And they would go there and they'd do shows and they would entertain each other as they had been entertaining the entire country, but were no longer allowed to put their names on their work or to, in many cases, even do their work because they were labeled as communists or fellow travelers. Wally Hilly published The People's Songbook, which is a very popular songbook from that era. One time, Wally Hilly was in New York, in Harlem, with Paul Robeson. And Paul Robeson walked out on the street, Wally behind him. And all of a sudden, of course, a crowd began to gather and people began to come from all around until the whole street was full of people. And they began to shout, "Sing for us, sing for us." And Paul Robeson said,
Well, how can I? I don't have a piano. And a whole bunch of fellas, three guys, ran up three stories of steps, picked up a piano, and carried it back down to the street and set it down next to Paul Robeson. And Wally Hilly sat down and played, and Paul Robeson sang on the streets of Harlem that day. We worked with Wally Hilly at Sunset Hall when he was a residence. This was a home for old radicals, senior radicals, here in Los Angeles. And here's a little song about his life. My father was a closet Nazi. My mother did Nazi. My sister, she saw. My sister was a premature anti-fascist. And I became the leader of the Yiddish choir.
Okay, now that we're winding down, let's move over to Michelle Autry.
Oh, I was hoping.
Give us something, Michelle.
Well, you know, I'm trying to decide between these two poems, so okay. I was trying to let the spirit lead me. Let me just come. Y'all want some energy?
Yeah.
Y'all want some trial and tribulation?
No, we're winding down.
Okay, here we go. Energy, pure energy, vibration, and frequency. Who knows? One day you might have to fast because these days are the last. And to be revolutionary, your energy must be pure divinity. Any revolutionary energy has got to be rooted in divinity. To be revolutionary, your energy must be pure divinity because I deal with energy. I do Christ-centered yoga and massage. Massage, you see, dealing with the cleaning of the body's energy fields. Yeah, synergy, divine chemistry, energy, and electricity. Open your meridians and flow with me, won't you, into divine Christ-centered mentality. Did you know that when you are clean, you can do anything? Because when you are clean, you can generate your own energy. Tell me, did you know? Well, then you reply, how can we generate our own energy? Really, we are just mere human beings, aren't we? I mean, we're not light bulbs or anything. Well, the answer is yes, you are, because we are really electrically charged beings. And that's why chemistry is really more than just a feeling. It really does indicate bonding spiritually, something beyond a needing more deeply than just a feeling. The synergy of the energy generated electrically when we are really whole and truly clean is more like the divinity of the energy field around your head when you are spirit-led and doing exactly what God has purposed you to do and be with great passion and abandon to, just like the Christ and all those who are self-realized. Remember, Christ is the way, the truth, and the light. So do clean your mind and clean your body all at the same time. Clean your soul, be made whole, saved. You see, that was the real message, truth, and reality behind Christianity. The powers that be just have tried to keep it hidden from both you and me. Furthermore, the clean queen and king can do anything, get close, or become one with God, and increase energy flow means totally conscious creativity, don't you know? It feels just like heat, pure electricity, creativity, productivity is the divinity of creative energy, synergy, chemistry when flowing freely in me and you too. If and when we choose, then please just use it, freely flowing with my creativity. That is just God flowing freely through me, just like his apostles and saints. So you shall soon see with their halos, which were vibrational, electrical, shining all of their energy. And boy, did they just glow. Got the glow, then glow some more. Not only can you glow, but when you can generate enough heat and light energy, if not for the whole of humanity and the human race, then at least for your very own space. So come now, raise your energy, synergy, chemistry, electricity, collectively to much higher levels of creativity where energy flows directly through you into me. Inevitably, it will reach and touch him and her and he and the whole world.
All right. Okay. I wanted to get another poem in, but we won't have time for that. I know Andrea, we're going to get her back in next week so we can roll. But I do want to hear a few little quick words before we wind down from Nate.
Yes.
And then we also got another guest in here, Too Tall. Just say a few words. Tell us who y'all Too Tall over there. Holler at us in the mic.
Holler at us, brother.
Hello, everybody. My name's Darren. I'm the brother of Andrea Ross over here. It's just wonderful in here. You know, everybody's fantastic. You know, I like all your pieces, and it sounds good.
Okay.
I wish I could do something, but I'm sorry. And, hey, maybe I'll learn one day.
Next time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Darren. Yay for my brother.
Yeah. Thanks. Give us something short.
Oh, you know, I'm just, you know, again, my name's Natay, comedian, new to Los Angeles, from Houston, adjusting to a lot of things out here in L.A., you know, the traffic, the parking, getting mistaken for Precious. Yeah. You know, I changed my whole life. I don't even eat fried chicken in public anymore since I moved out here, you know. So that's my, but I'm feeling good about myself. I lost 200 pounds, so I'm feeling real good, you know. Feel good. It's the same 50 pounds four times, you know. I'm the biggest loser, you know. So, you know.
Okay, yeah, so wonderful. Good, that's great. I love that. A quick little word from Asian, and then Lee's going to close us out here.
Yes, to all my Los Angeles residents and those nearby, please come out to the Imagine Life Theater from Friday, April 12th to the 14th. It's called, the play's entitled The Museum of Living Art. It's from the Napi Nation. Again, it's the Imagine Life Theater. The website is www.nappynation.brownpapertickets.com. And that's the Museum of Living Art. And April 20th is my one-man show, Lennox, at the very famous Chaos Network in Leimert Park. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Adrian. Lee,
I want to tell you about, we're doing a celebration of the, well, not a celebration, but a commemoration of the 10th anniversary of the Iraqi War. Bush 2 invaded Iraq. We're reading the poems of Julia Stein, which in her new book, What Were They Like? We're going to have several actors reading her poetry. And then a wonderful talk by Jay Abdo, who is a refugee from Syria. He's a famous actor in Syria, unknown here. And that is April the 4th at ArtShare.
Okay. Thank you, Lee. Now, please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, skitrow.la. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. From your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I want to thank my guests here, and I leave you with the song that opens the show, Butterfly, by Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry.